Today's special guest, Professor of Economics at Boston University, Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff, author of the INFORM Act. Well, it's a pleasure and an honor to have Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff, a professor of economics, author of The Clash of the Generations, as well as the INFORM Act, the Intergenerational Financial Obligations Reform Act, focused on improving the welfare of every American. Welcome back, Professor Kotlikoff.
My pleasure. Back with you.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to begin the discussion today with your recent comments before the U.S. Senate on the U.S. budget. You know, we hear of Greece and its struggle here with debt, and a default appears imminent. Negotiations broke down over the weekend. We don't hear a lot of talk, though, by our officials, at least not in the mainline press, regarding our debt situation. And when you delve into the numbers and look at the minutiae, it sounds less than sanguine, to put it euphemistically. Tell us what you told the Senate and what's keeping you up at night.
Well, I told the senators that our country is broke. We're not broke 50 years from now or 30 years from now or 10 years from now. We're broke today. We have a fiscal gap, a gap separating the value in the present of all future projected expenditures, net of all future projected taxes, which is $210 trillion large. That's based on CBO's, the Congressional Budget Office's, projection. So, and this is a methodology looking, putting everything on the books, looking long-term at the infinite horizon, but discounting, taking the value in the present of things way out in the future that are projected and obviously uncertain, but because they're way out in the future, their increment to the fiscal gap is relatively small. But they can't be ignored, because otherwise you're kind of ending up with a measure of our fiscal obligations that's leaving something out of the picture, so, and is very subject to language manipulation. So economists as a group believe that this is the way to do the accounting correctly. There's the informact.org is a website where you'll see over 1,200 economists endorse this kind of accounting, and that includes 17 Nobel Prize winners. So if you look at the fiscal gap, it's $210 trillion. That's 58% of the present value of revenue that's projected. So that means we need an immediate and permanent 58% tax hike. Every single federal tax, you name it, the FICA tax, the federal income tax, the federal excise taxes, federal corporate taxes, estate and gift taxes, that entire stream or path of tax revenues that's being projected by the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, needs to be 58% higher to pay for all the expenditures we have planned to do, according to the CBO's projection. So the country is in far worse fiscal shape than Detroit was before it declared bankruptcy. They were about 20% underfinanced. The entire country is 58% underfinanced. Illinois' pension funds are about 60% underfinanced, just to give you a comparison. So, next to, we're not in as bad a shape as perhaps Russia or Greece, but we're in terrible shape, and far worse shape than most developed countries. And this is not going to, and nobody's paying any attention. Nobody in the political sphere here is really talking about this, with one exception: Dr. Carson, Ben Carson, who's running for president, mentioned these numbers, and it was immediately criticized as coming up with phony numbers. But I wrote a column defending him. I know nothing really about Dr. Carson's positions on anything. I'm not a supporter necessarily, but I think he was telling the truth about our fiscal situation.
You talk about a $210 trillion gap, and let's assume we make, I don't know, as a year GDP, $17 trillion. Back of the envelope math, we owe 12 times. Just to give some context, a household typically can borrow 3 years of total income on a mortgage. We would owe 12 times just to take out that same mortgage. You'd have to default, or you'd have to come up, as you say, with ridiculously high taxes that no politician would agree to. So I think you make a great point, but we won't linger on this. You also go on to say that this could lead to a collapse. And we've heard a lot about imminent crises over the years. People get numb to the idea because they're just trying to get through the day-to-day grind. If we don't take steps now, we could find ourselves in a quagmire. And I think it's interesting because we had a guest a few weeks ago, Mr. Embry from Canada, who pointed out it's much better to be a year or two early when it comes to preparations than even an hour or two late. Are you afraid that most Americans could be too late in their preparations for what's coming?
Yeah, there could be very high inflation because the government's been printing money at a high rate since 2007. This is what you see in countries that are broke. They print money because they can't politically cut spending enough or raise taxes enough, either economically or politically. There's only so much taxation you can impose on a population before they start leaving the country. So there are some limits. And the easy thing for the politicians to do is put pressure on the central bank to print money. And if the central bankers want to be, anticipate that or think through what's going to be happening, they can just, basically take their directions from the fact that Congress is not paying its bills, and they could just start printing money on their own. So I think that's what you saw with Ben Bernanke, that he was observing the fact that the government wasn't covering its obligations, and he thought, well, let's print money, and maybe we can keep interest rates low in the process and not really let people understand how much money is being created and how much this could lead to inflation. So he's increased the base money supply, which is called the monetary base, by a factor of about four since 2007. So he's laid the basis for a fourfold increase in the price level for hyperinflation. And I don't know when that could happen. It may never happen, but people like Milton Friedman, who were concerned about just printing money to pay for the government's bills, would be, Milton Friedman were alive today, he would be screaming the top of his lungs over this. So I'm concerned about it. There are a lot of reasons why the inflation rate hasn't gone up yet, but it's there's a lot of money sloshing around and potentially sloshing around, a lot of money sitting in reserves in the banks that could be let loose into the economic bloodstream. So anyway, that's what we're doing. We're running on empty. We're printing money. We're not investing in infrastructure. We have been engaged in a Ponzi scheme. The reason we've got all this huge fiscal gap is that we put all these obligations to the baby boomers for Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security off the books. We have huge defense obligations going forward, just general spending, and we're not investing in the country. So the whole thing is a total mess, and we need some real leadership that's apolitical, because these politicians are taking the country down and our children down with it.
I do believe that Dr. Friedman and all of the folks who followed in his footsteps would concur with you that it's economic suicide.
I think 1,200 economists, including 17 Nobel Prize winners, have sounded the alarm. If you go to the informact.org, you'll see endorsements of the fiscal gap, and they understand that the fiscal gap is absolutely enormous, horrendous. So the economics profession has spoken very clearly. The fact that the politicians and the press aren't paying any attention is not, we've done what we can do as economists, and these are mostly academic economists, and these are people from the right and the left politically in terms of their... Some people are obviously not everybody's on the right or the left, but you have economists who lean right, very far right. You have economists who lean very far left. But what they're saying is economic science is not up for grabs. There's a way to measure our long-term fiscal problem situation, and this is it. And they understand how big the problem is. So it's not that one or two economists agree with me. There may be very few people that are speaking out publicly to the extent I am or the pitch I am, but the vast majority of economists who understand what our science has to offer are endorsing the Inform Act, and to get 17 Nobel Prize winners to endorse any piece of legislation is essentially impossible. And this is what happened. You've got that number. That's almost all the American Nobel Prize winners in economics have endorsed this bill. It would require, let me just be clear what the bill would do. It would require the government to start doing fiscal gap accounting on a routine basis. It would require the CBO, the GAO, and the OMB all to do fiscal gap accounting. And, so far these agencies have refused to do that. So they're saying they know more than the entire economics profession. Well, shame on them. I think it's a disgrace that they're just ignoring the top economists from Harvard, MIT, Chicago, Yale, Stanford, Princeton, Penn, you name it, are on that list. Every top, it's a who's who of economists. And people like George Shultz are on this list, former Secretary of Treasury. So, yeah, we have big problems, but they're just getting worse because nobody's paying any attention. And I don't think any of the other, there's something like 25 presidential candidates, maybe one. Again, Ben Carson has mentioned it, but that's it.
I think it was very eloquently said. And hat tip to you and all of your colleagues for the fine work you've done. I have a feeling that people will turn to the Inform Act as soon as the economy rolls over in earnest, as I think you would agree is inevitable at some point. And, of course, the stock market, which tends to be the barometer that seems to have the most eyeballs on it, at least in the general public. You brought up a really key statistic. If we look at the St. Louis Fed's, the monetary base, 2009, it's been parabolic, and it is a fourfold increase, and there really is no signs of that rolling over. That's not to say they couldn't curtail QE operations. Talking about raising rates, do you think that this threat, if you will, of higher rates, could they be serious about cooling off the economy?
I think interest rates are going to go up. I think they're unnaturally low. And, there's major damage to certain people that are on fixed incomes and trying to get some return on their investments. So the elderly population has been suffering for years now from these low interest rates. I think that Janet Yellen has decided to stop printing money at the rate that Ben Bernanke was printing it, and that if rates have to go up because of that, where rates are, it's pretty much the Fed has some control over short-term rates, but it doesn't necessarily have control over 30-year rates. And the 30-year rates are being determined in the market based on expectations of inflation. If enough people understand how broke the country is, they're going to stay miles away from any long-term bonds that are nominal, that are not inflation-indexed, which means inflation rates, interest prices of bonds will go down, and interest rates will go up, and then money will become more of a hot potato because people realize that the longer they hold money, the more interest they're losing. And that's what, then you have this massive addition to the money supply. More of it will come out of the banks' reserves into the bloodstream, be lent out, and then you will have it being moving around more rapidly. So you'll have faster money being effectively like more money. And then you'll have inflation take off. Well, that's a scenario that can arise here almost overnight. By overnight, I don't mean in one day. I mean maybe over a couple of years. But we've seen this time and again from the look at the hyperinflation in the year 300 under Diocletian, the Roman emperor. This is a tried and true formula for disaster when you print money out the wazoo. And that's what the government's been doing here in our country. And I say government, it's the Federal Reserve, but the Federal Reserve is in cahoots with the rest of Congress and the Treasury, easing the burden, this whole notion of quantitative easing, it's easing the burden on Congress to do its job and on the president to do his job to balance the books. And it's not the just keeping the deficit low, because the deficit is really a meaningless number. It's really the fiscal gap, because, again, most of the obligations and the increase in the obligations are off the books. So your Social Security benefits, for example, aren't part of federal debt, but they're a real obligation. Somebody's got to pay for them. And we're leaving these bills basically to our kids. That's immoral. Every time we talk, the situation doesn't look any better. This is a credit card bill, $210 trillion credit card bill that keeps growing with interest. It doesn't get smaller. It doesn't just sit there it's not a bill that we have to pay in the future. It's a bill that if we don't pay, it gets bigger. And the fiscal gap grew by $5 trillion over the last year. The official deficit was, the increase in the official debt was maybe $300-400 billion.
From our perspective, you are a hero because you have taken an unpopular stance that many officials do not want to hear, and that is, folks, you need to curtail your spending. You can't have the power extended without some oversight here, and things are getting out of control, and you've sort of stuck your neck out with many of your fine colleagues. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Okay. You take care. Bye-bye.